Find a comfortable sitting posture. With your feet flat on the ground. Begin to relax, settling in. Lengthen the exhale for three breaths. Allow the breath to return to normal. And feel the breathing in the body. Feel the body sitting and relax. Allowing whatever busyness there was today to fall away and bring yourself here. As we settle in, first notice that you are aware. Then notice what you can be aware of. Sounds, sensations in the body. Everything is welcome. Relax and bring awareness up to the head area. Soften the head and the face. And allow the jaw to relax. Calm the neck and shoulders, letting go of any tension that you can. Broaden the upper torso and back, and allow the heart to open. Allow the arms to hang and the hands to rest on the thighs. Ease the lower and mid back, sitting in a way that feels comfortable and supported. Soothe the abdomen, feeling how the breath is like a gentle massage. Rest the legs and buttocks on the chair. Allow the awareness to go deep inside. With each exhale, let go of thinking in the mind. When the thinking slows down, there's more time to notice the body sensations. Immerse the attention in the body. Find something in your body right now that feels pleasant. It could be the warmth of your hands on your thighs, or the support your upper back feels from the chair. Or the gentle waves of breathing. If nothing feels comfortable, relax and find somewhere in the body that feels neutral, like your feet. Feel into the sensation. There may be warmth or tingling or heaviness. Bring your awareness close to the sensations as though awareness could touch. The sensations might be faint, but continue to connect with them through your awareness. Stay close to any feelings of well-being. bringing the awareness to touch those feelings again and again. Pleasant sensations can spread throughout the body, like water flowing into and permeating the whole body. Connect again and again in this simple way with the pleasant body sensations. Now experiment with turning the corners of your mouth up in the hint of a smile. Feel into the heart area and think the sound, ah. Ride the waves of the breath, feeling them lifting and lowering the torso. Notice if joy is present. Feel the sensations in the body, which might feel bubbly or light. Notice any vibrations in the body. This life energy has a calmness to it. It's stable and grounding. Rest and feel into the nourishing quality of the calm. This calmness can permeate the entire body. When there is less thinking and more sensing, the body sensations can be known more fully. Allow yourself to enjoy the body sensations. If thoughts arise, notice how they limit the knowing of the body sensations. Notice if there's an inner contentment with meditating, with being here in the present moment, experiencing the sensations flowing and moving. Is there a peaceful happiness flowing in the body? Connecting over and over again with the body sensations is relaxing for the mind. When the mind doesn't need to figure anything out, it can rest in the simple knowing. The mind can connect with the body sensations in a simple way. Notice if you can feel this unification of mind and body. Please continue meditating in this way in silence. So, the happiness cascade. It's a progression. From well-being to joy to tranquility to happiness to concentration. Well-being includes pleasant physical sensations in the body, and it progresses to joy because well-being makes the heart happy. Joy includes rapture, excitement, and energy. A joyous heart calms the body and leads to tranquility, which is deep calm. The calm body soothes an agitated mind and leads to happiness. This type of happiness is soft and sweet, especially in the mind. And a non-agitated mind unites with the body and enables the whole being to be unified in concentration. Tonight, we'll follow this progression, and I'll be talking in detail about each stage in the process. I guided tonight's meditation through the happiness cascade, albeit in an accelerated way. But hopefully, it gave you a taste of some of these qualities in the body that can progress in the happiness cascade. So, why is happiness important? In August, I read an article in the New York Times by Jenny Tates entitled, How to Strengthen Your Happiness Muscle. While the article's intent was to highlight studies about how to lessen depression by increasing the amount of joy people felt, some of the takeaways I believe are relevant to meditators like us. The last line of the article is a quote from Dr. Lucas Lafreniere, who said, "The truth is, sometimes we need to behave like happy people if we actually want to be happy." And I think this makes sense that we can practice what we want to grow in ourselves, such as happiness. But I think we will get more benefit if we first understand what we mean by happiness and then align it with our Buddhist understandings. So, first, the basic question: do we want to be happy? I think the obvious answer is yes. And why do we want to be happy? Well, certainly it feels better than being miserable. But I think we can be more positive. I would reframe it as happiness makes life with all its ups and downs worth living. Instead of the everyday happiness that was talked about in the article, I like the term wholesome happiness. This is a Buddhist way of thinking about happiness. So I would rewrite the quote to be, "The truth is, we need to appreciate and strengthen wholesome happiness in ourselves if we want to feel happy." When we practice metta for ourselves or for others, as soon as we've wished for one to be free from suffering and to feel safe, we go right to wishing for them to be happy. It's a fundamental human wish to be happy. And the third Brahma Vihara is mudita, sympathetic joy, which is the same as what I'm calling wholesome joy. The Brahma Viharas are also called the illimitables because we can't have too much of them. Each and every one of us is deserving of happiness. Another reason to practice happiness is because humans have what's called a negativity bias, which means we remember negative emotions more than positive emotions. An article in Positive Psychology explains, negativity bias is thought to be an adaptive evolutionary function. Thousands of years ago, our ancestors were exposed to immediate environmental threats that we no longer need to worry about. Predators, for example. And being more attentive to these negative stimuli played a useful role in survival. End quote. As modern humans, we tend to hang on to criticism much more than positive feedback. The ratio is something like five compliments are needed to balance out one negative comment. So, for this reason, my teacher Gil Fronsdal says we're allowed to give a slight preference to the positive feelings in meditation. This doesn't mean we ignore the unpleasant, but when both are pleasant, we are allowed to lean into the pleasant. This is what I was cultivating in the guided meditation. The happiness cascade is sometimes referred to as the well-being cascade because it starts with well-being. The Pali word for well-being is pamoja. When you have wholesome habits like practicing meditation, living ethically, and acting with kindness, compassion, and generosity, feelings of well-being are more likely to arise. Tonight, we started by relaxing and feeling into what was pleasant to begin cultivating this inner well-being and to appreciate what well-being feels like. These physical sensations are felt in the body as warmth or tingling or heaviness. The words peaceful, soothing, satisfying, gratifying, and comforting are all descriptions of how well-being can feel when it arises in us. I'm going to share a personal story about how Buddhism helped me to have more well-being. First, a little history about my journey with Buddhism. I've been meditating for about 30 years and went on my first retreat about 20 years ago. Even though the first retreat was difficult, something shifted in me, and I decided to go on retreat once a year. On retreat, I learned about the three unwholesome roots: greed, hatred, and delusion, and self-identified as a greedy type. I had lots of desires. Desires for things, desires for fancy dinners, desires for exciting vacations. I was working 60 hours a week in the technology field, and I never felt like I could do enough for my job. On weekends, I was pretty hedonistic, justifying it as how I needed to recharge from the long work week. But I started noticing that I was feeling exhausted rather than enjoying all of it. This was in contrast to how I felt after a week on retreat, which was rested and refreshed. After I retired and I had more time for retreat practice, I went to Shwe U Min Monastery in Burma for a month. There, I met practitioners who had less greed, and I learned from them. I learned about the parami practice that is done by Burmese lay practitioners. The paramis are the 10 virtuous qualities: generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. I am so pleased that Ram is teaching you all the parami. And the fact that you have already learned about generosity and ethics makes a wonderful foundation for the happiness cascade. When I returned from Burma, I started a program similar to yours that focused on one parami a month. Shortly after that, I started taking the refuges and five householder precepts daily to improve my ethics. About 6 years ago, I felt I was ready for the next level of ethical living. I stopped drinking alcohol and I became vegan. Now, I'm not saying that I think everyone needs to do that. Each person has their own path. But for me, it was revolutionary. I feel what's known as the bliss of blamelessness because of my renunciation and improved ethics. No longer am I causing harm by how I nourish myself. And my feelings of well-being have increased because I'm acting in ways that feel aligned to my values. Well-being feels pleasant and wholesome, and because of this, it can lead to joy. Joy is the second step in the happiness cascade. The Pali word for joy is piti. Sometimes piti is translated as rapture. It can feel stimulating, exciting, and energizing. In our culture, piti often has its roots in greed and can be felt as wanting things, experiences, accomplishments. This is worldly piti. But wholesome joy is also possible. And this is sometimes called spiritual joy. I'll share another personal story about how I learned the difference between worldly joy and spiritual joy. When I was at the monastery in Burma, I realized my heart was stingy and closed. The Burmese culture values generosity. And as I walked behind the monks going on alms rounds, I saw how important it was for the villagers to give food to the monks. I decided to offer a meal at the monastery, which meant I chose the food and paid for it, and my name was displayed during the meal. The day that I offered the meal, I stood at the front of the dining hall and I felt elated as I watched the monks and nuns and lay practitioners filing into the dining hall, filling their plates and eating in silence. It was like my body was weightless and my heart felt open and huge. It was a type of joy I had never felt before. It was wholesome piti. It had arisen because of my generosity. I had given a gift without expecting anything in return. Just remembering it brings PT up for me. What are other examples of wholesome joy? Gil Fronsdal writes, "In Buddhism, benefiting oneself is not the same as acquiring pleasure, status, or wealth. Instead, it is developing beautiful and wholesome qualities of the heart and mind. It is cultivating the kind of inner well-being, love and peace that helps make how we are in the world as helpful for others as what we do." End quote. So wholesome joy can arise when we care for others with kindness and compassion. And this includes self-care, such as making time for meditating daily. As I mentioned, I was surprised to learn that giving could lead to joy. I had my first taste of this in Burma. Yes, I gave my money, but I received so much more in return. My generosity made me feel elated and it opened my heart in ways I could not have imagined. I don't have any illusions that I'm perfect now. I know I still have plenty of desires and plenty of clingings. But I share this story in part because I think it's important to notice personal growth and to celebrate it. It helps motivate us to keep growing and learning, especially when it's difficult. There's a Buddhist text you might be familiar with called the Abhidhamma. It's known as Buddhist psychology. I went on several Abhidhamma retreats with my teacher, Steve Armstrong. There I learned how to think about mind states in a useful way. I think you know the terms kusala and akusala, wholesome and unwholesome. According to the Abhidhamma, each mind state is either wholesome or unwholesome. For example, greed is unwholesome. But piti is a bit unique. It is neither wholesome nor wholesome. Instead, it depends on what is arising with it. For example, if I'm meditating and I start to feel well-being in the body with the pleasant sensations, and I feel into those sensations and it naturally progresses to joy, it will be wholesome because the well-being is wholesome. But if I start to get attached to the pleasant feelings, greed can arise. The greed wants the pleasantness to continue, which can cause striving for a certain type of meditative experience. And this makes the piti unwholesome. Sayadaw Upandita describes this experience as attachment to the spiritual goodies. The end result of Buddhist practice is liberation. It is not having spiritual goodies. Now I'd like to read a bit from the Simile of the Cloth Sutta. Suppose there was a cloth that was dirty and soiled. No matter what dye the dyer applied, whether blue or yellow or red or magenta, it would look poorly dyed and impure in color. Why is that? Because of the impurity of the cloth. End quote. In the same way, a mind that's filled with the impurity of greed the cloth represents the stains of greed. In contrast, the sutta continues, suppose there was a cloth that was pure and clean. No matter what dye the dyer applied, whether blue or yellow or red or magenta, it would look well dyed and pure in color. Why is that? Because of the purity of the cloth. End quote. The cloth is now illustrating what a pure mind without greed is like. The dye represents wholesome qualities. When the mind doesn't have greed, it can absorb the dye and have wholesome qualities such as spiritual joy. In the happiness cascade, wholesome joy next progresses to tranquility. The Pali word is pasadi. It's felt in the body as deep calm. In our culture, being tranquil isn't generally seen as a good thing. It's more likely that people want to feel passionate or inspired or driven, and that they want to be seen as accomplished or capable or successful. So being tranquil might seem like a bad thing. But I think there's room to expand our understanding of pasadi to reflect its wholesome qualities. Having felt anxiety for much of my life, I know I prefer the experience of feeling calm to feeling anxious. Other words for tranquility that might resonate for you include ease, peace, relaxed, accepting, agreeable, letting go, or freedom. Feel free to substitute your preferred word for tranquility as I continue talking about it. To quote Gilligan, meditative tranquility is a compelling state involving feelings of peace, calm, serenity, contentment, and deep rest. The body's tranquility is like a clear lake with a broad, still surface. In the mind, tranquility is like the soft, quiet, fresh air above the lake at dawn. Tranquility is born when agitation calms down, conflict is put to rest, and desires are reduced. End quote. Metaphors like a still lake help us to imagine tranquility more clearly. Gill continues, "The Buddha said that tranquility is the nourishment for tranquility. This is the idea that tranquility is fostered by paying attention to tranquility when it is present. Peace grows by noticing what is peaceful, and relaxation expands by appreciating relaxation. Awareness of even the slightest experience of tranquility, peace, or relaxation can foster more of the same." End quote. I think that's really incredible. Not only does well-being and joy lead to tranquility, the tranquility continues to increase because of the original tranquility. This is what is meant by a cascade. We can imagine how well-being starts high up in the mountains as a little stream, and the stream flows downhill and becomes a river when joy arises, and the river keeps flowing and growing as tranquility arises and increases. The next stage in the happiness cascade is happiness. The Pali word is sukha. And it's felt in the body as sublime and sweet. It's much less bubbly than piti. Can be felt as deep contentment. There are two types of happiness, outer happiness and inner happiness. Outer happiness is also called worldly happiness, and includes things like the happy feeling that arises when we watch the sunset or look at a beautiful scene in nature. Sometimes worldly happiness includes greed, but not always. In contrast, inner happiness or spiritual happiness comes from the inside of us. It's wholesome and nourishing. Gill talks about inner happiness as coming from the yoniso manasikara, which is translated as profound inner attention and the source of our deepest wisdom. This inner happiness can exist regardless of what is happening outside of us. And for that reason, it makes us resilient. I think I should pause here for a moment because if you are suffering, all this talk of happiness can feel like an irritant. It can feel like a Pollyanna view of the world that only acknowledges what's good. But that would be delusion. And that's not what I'm trying to describe. Yes, we have to acknowledge when dukkha is present. Let's review the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. The cause of suffering is attachment. It is possible to end suffering, and the way to the end of suffering is the Noble Eightfold Path. In the Upanisa Sutta, we hear about the metaphor of the mountaintop that is composed of hard, dry rocks. We are the mountaintop, and the rocks represent our suffering. The second noble truth, our craving, clinging, and willful ignorance, has stranded us on the mountaintop, surrounded by hard, dry rocks. That's what suffering can feel like. But there is a way out of suffering, and one of those ways is with the happiness cascade. To quote from the Upanisad Sutta, "It's like when the heavens rain heavily on the mountaintop And the water flows downhill to fill the hollows, crevices, and creeks. As they become full, they fill up the pools. The pools fill up the lakes. The lakes fill up the streams, and the streams fill up the rivers. And as the rivers become full, they fill up the ocean. End quote. The water flowing and growing in this way. They're the wholesome qualities that build on each other. And it is the path to liberation. Concentration is the next stage in the happiness cascade. The Pali word is samadhi, and it is characterized as a unified mind connected to the body. Some of you may know Ajahn Sumedho, the English monk who ordained with Ajahn Chah in the late 50s. He's now quite old, but I've listened to many of his talks over the years and I find him very insightful. The idea of his that I want to share is one that helped me to understand samadhi better. Here's the quote. It's common to think if I could just get my samadhi right, I would be happy. Have you ever thought that? I know I did. And I spent time on retreat trying to get concentrated. But what Ajahn Sumedho is pointing to with this quote is that when we strive and over-effort to get concentrated, we end up with a focused, brittle type of concentration that is hard to maintain and easily lost. This is called dry samadhi. Do you know that the proximate cause for samadhi is happiness? I think that's good news. This type of concentration that develops with the happiness cascade is resilient and open. It's known as wet samadhi. It was called Kanaka Samadhi by Mahasi Sayadaw. Kanaka Samadhi means continuous unification of the mind. So if we want samadhi that's durable, what we should be asking ourselves is, how do I develop true happiness? So that the mind can be at ease. I believe the answer is to practice the happiness cascade. The simile of the cloth covers the whole happiness cascade, so I'll read from the later part of the sutta. When they have given up the imperfections of the mind, they gain well-being. When they are glad, they are joyful, and rapture springs up. When the mind is full of rapture, the body becomes tranquil. When the body is tranquil, they feel bliss. And when they're blissful, the mind becomes immersed in samadhi. End quote. The happiness cascade is actually throughout the Buddhist teachings. The Anapanasati Sutta also includes the happiness cascade. Steps 4 through 11 map to it. She trains herself, breathing in, calming the bodily formation. She trains herself, breathing out, calming the bodily formation, which is pamoja, well-being. And this continues with experiencing joy, experiencing pleasure, which is piti, experiencing mental formations, calming the mental formations, which is pasadi, tranquility, experiencing the mind, step 9, pleasing the mind, step 10, is sukha, wholesome happiness. And the 11th step, concentrating the mind, is samadhi. To summarize, The happiness cascade starts with well-being. If we lean into what is pleasant in the body, the pleasantness grows. When the pleasant sensations are known, they can progress to joy. By focusing on wholesome joy, our minds become pure and tranquil. And this calmness is deep and nourishing, which leads to spiritual, wholesome happiness. And once the mind is happy, it becomes unified. Thank you for listening to the Dharma.